We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
My fiance cheated with her sick ex, canceled our wedding, then came back 12 years later. Her name was Celia Moraine, and 12 years ago she was supposed to be my wife. That's what the invitation said. That's what the engraved rings promised. That's what every friend and family member believed when they flew in, booked hotel rooms, and set aside time to celebrate the beginning of something beautiful. My name is Rowan Hale, and I was ready. I had spent months preparing, finalizing the suit fittings, double-checking the venue reservations, handwriting vows that I rewrote 5 times because none of them seemed to say enough. I had even installed custom lighting at the reception hall to make the photographs warmer, more alive. I wanted it perfect. I needed it to be perfect. But perfection doesn't make people stay. 4 days before the wedding, my phone rang just after midnight. I was standing in my kitchen, barefoot, eating leftover chicken straight from the pan. The phone lit up with her name Celia, and I answered immediately. Her voice was trembling. Not sobbing, not hysterical, just trembling, like someone caught between truth and something they were trying very hard to believe. She didn't start with hello. She didn't ask how I was. She said, "Rowan, Jackson's sick." Jackson, her ex, the man she swore she'd cut out, the one she promised was a closed chapter, more memory than person. I didn't say anything at first. I thought maybe this was a pre-wedding panic call. Maybe she just needed reassurance. But she kept going, her words tightening like a noose. "He's really bad. I have to be there for him." I blinked, leaning against the counter. "Okay, for how long?" Her pause dragged. She inhaled deeply. "I need you to cancel the wedding." There it was, sharp, deliberate. Like she'd rehearsed it. I remember looking down at my hand, still holding the greasy fork from dinner, not even sure I'd heard her right. I said her name again, softer, like maybe that would bring her back into focus. "Celia, what are you talking about?" "I'm not coming back, Rowan. I have to be there, and if you can't accept that, then maybe we shouldn't be together at all." I waited for the part where she would backtrack, the part where she'd say it was just temporary, that she was confused, that she didn't mean it. But that part never came. "If you don't obey, then stay alone." Obey. That word hit me harder than the rest. Obey. Like I was some stubborn child refusing to understand a lesson she'd already decided for both of us. Obey. Like my pain was secondary to her virtue. Obey. Like love was a command she could withdraw if I didn't comply. I didn't scream. I didn't throw my phone or beg or cry. I didn't ask what Jackson had or why it had to be her. Instead, I stood in silence, listening to her breathe on the other end of the line. Like maybe part of her knew what she was doing and didn't have the guts to say it out loud. When I finally spoke, it was only 3 words, "I heard you," then I hung up. The next hour was slow, numb. I sat in the dark, staring at the kitchen wall, like it might rewrite what had just happened. I could have called her back, could have driven to her apartment, but what was I going to say? That I forgave her? That I'd wait for her to decide again? No, that wasn't love. That was self-erasure. So I blocked her number. Then I blocked her parents. I opened our wedding website and deleted it. I took the rings, hers and mine, and locked them in a drawer. I stared at the tailored suit still hanging in my closet, wondering if it would ever be worn, or if it had just become the most expensive lesson of my life. I didn't leave my apartment that night, not physically, but something in me did walk away, from her, from the version of me who waited around for people who couldn't stay, from the man who thought loyalty was about sacrifice instead of balance. Celia Moraine had made a choice. She walked back into someone else's arms, and in doing so, she burned the bridge between us to ash. They say real love never dies, but that's a lie we tell ourselves to keep the story pretty. Real love, the kind that builds, that anchors, that expands who you are, that love doesn't issue ultimatums, it doesn't demand obedience, and it sure as hell doesn't walk out 4 days before a wedding because an old flame is coughing in the dark. So no, her loyalty was never mine, not really. It just borrowed my time, wore my ring, and almost took my future with it. Almost. She said it like she was canceling brunch. That's what stayed with me the longest. Not the heartbreak, not the betrayal, but the ease, the complete lack of weight in her voice when she delivered a decision that detonated the future I had built brick by brick around her. You'll understand one day, she said, like I was some emotional novice who couldn't see the brilliance in what she was doing, as if there would ever come a day when I'd look back and thank her for leaving me. After I blocked her, I thought it would be over. I thought silence would be the clean break I needed. But my phone kept buzzing, first with unknown numbers, then with ones I recognized but hadn't stored. Greta Moraine, her mother, cold elegance wrapped in spiritual superiority. She always looked at me like I was a pet project Celia had taken up, charity in human form. Now Greta was calling to tell me how mature Celia's decision was, how it was an act of selflessness to go back to her ex during a time of need. Then came Claude, Dr. Claude Moraine, her father, a man who wore his degrees like medals and measured morality in grand gestures. He left a voicemail that began with, "Rowan, I want to offer you some perspective," and ended with, "You're too emotional to see that this is love in its most generous form." Love. That wasn't love. That was emotional theft disguised as compassion, and somehow I was the one they expected to applaud. The part that messed me up the most wasn't that Celia left. It was that they expected me to praise her for it, like my heartbreak was a small price to pay for her noble sacrifice, as if the invitations I sent out, the deposits I paid, the life I rearranged, all of it was disposable because Jackson coughed hard enough to warrant her pity. I guess the years we spent together didn't hold up next to nostalgia and an old flame's weakness. That night, I didn't cry. I packed. I walked through my apartment with a trash bag in one hand and a silence in my chest that felt like a second heartbeat. I tossed the save the dates into it, the extra favors we'd ordered, the wedding board she made on the cork wall with handwritten notes about table arrangements and song selections. All of it went into the bag. I pulled down the photo of us from the hallway, the one we took in Asheville when the fall leaves lit up the sky like fire. I stared at it for a long time. We looked happy. We looked sure. But smiles lie in photographs. They don't tell you how much someone is willing to let you hurt. By sunrise, I had made up my mind. I wasn't going to stay in the city. I wasn't going to keep looking at the apartment we were supposed to move into after the honeymoon. I wasn't going to hear from mutual friends asking if I was okay. I deleted everything, my social media, my email address. I didn't want comfort. I wanted distance. So I took a bag of clothes, my tools, and what little furniture I'd built myself. And I left. Not forever, but long enough to disappear. I remember standing at the curb, the air thick with morning traffic and the kind of stillness that only exists when your life has completely unstitched. I looked up at the window where I used to wave goodbye to her, where I once stood watching her walk toward me like a promise I'd finally been allowed to keep. That window was empty now, just like everything else. There's a moment, right before you choose to erase someone, when you realize just how much of yourself you gave to them. That realization stings because, no matter how much you try to retrieve what you gave, time, trust, faith, it never comes back the same. It's like ripping pages out of a book and hoping the story still makes sense. I didn't beg. I didn't call her parents back. I didn't scroll through old texts or sift through pictures, wondering what I missed. I wasn't going to do what they wanted, frame her betrayal as some great act of courage. I erased them the way they erased me. By the end of that week, I was gone. It took me 2 full days of driving before I even looked at a map. I didn't have a destination, just a direction, anywhere that wasn't here. I followed open roads like they were veins leading away from a dying heart, fueling my escape with black coffee, bad diner food, and silence. No music, no podcasts, just the hum of tires on asphalt and the slow unfurling of grief in my chest. Eventually, I stopped in a small town I'd never heard of, Faroth. It wasn't marked by anything special. No famous landmarks or tourist traps, just wide porches, modest storefronts, and streets lined with trees that looked like they'd seen everything and judged nothing. That was enough for me. There was a cabin for sale on the edge of town, weather-worn but solid, tucked behind a grove of pine trees like it had something to hide. I walked through it once and said yes. No negotiation, no inspections, no second thoughts. It needed work, so did I. I used the little savings I had and what was left of a small inheritance my grandfather left me. It wasn't much, but enough to cover the down payment and tools. I slept on a mattress on the floor for weeks, cooked on a hot plate, washed dishes in the bathroom sink. But every nail I drove into the walls, every floorboard I replaced felt like reclaiming something. They didn't break me, not really. That's how Halecraft was born. It started with one table, then a bookshelf. Then a neighbor saw my work and asked if I could build something for their niece's wedding. Word spread. Orders trickled in. I built a workshop out back and turned my solitude into sawdust, my anger into finish and polish. There was something sacred about it, watching raw wood transform beneath my hands into something strong, useful, beautiful. I stopped keeping track of the days. There were no anniversaries to dread, no birthdays to miss. The air was cleaner out here, the kind that forced you to breathe deeper whether you wanted to or not. I learned to cook, not out of passion but survival, and I wasn't bad at it. I made peace with silence, learned the rhythm of living without performance, no social updates, no chasing anyone's approval. Just me, the work, and the land. But the house felt empty, not hauntingly, just quiet. One afternoon I saw a flyer at the COOP about a rescue shelter nearby. I wasn't looking for anything, I was picking up paint. But something made me drive out there. A volunteer led me down the rows of kennels, and that's when I saw him. Bishop, half German Shepherd, half something unidentifiable, lean, weathered, wary. He didn't bark, just stared at me like he...
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
Already knew my story. I took him home the next day. He didn't destroy anything, didn't beg for attention. He just followed me from room to room, like he understood the space between people better than most humans ever would. From that moment on, I wasn't really alone, not completely. For a while, that was enough. I didn't date, didn't flirt, didn't even consider it. Not because I was bitter, but because I didn't want to hand over pieces of myself until I knew what was left. I had to learn how to stand without resentment propping me up. So I waited. Not for someone to save me, but for someone who wouldn't need saving. Juniper Vance walked into my life on a rainy afternoon, looking for a handcrafted desk for her writing studio. She wore a raincoat that swallowed her whole, curls pinned back with a pencil, and glasses that fogged up the second she stepped into my shop. She laughed quietly, like she wasn't used to laughing in front of strangers. But it stayed with me. We talked about wood grains and dimensions. But by the time she left, we were talking about books, stubborn dogs, and how neither of us knew how to enjoy a Saturday without a to-do list. She came back 2 weeks later, not because the desk wasn't right, it was, but because she wanted a bookshelf to match, then a chair, then a kitchen island. One night, I caught her looking around my shop with that soft sort of wonder people rarely show in adulthood. This place feels like it's been lived in by ghosts who finally learned how to rest, she said. That's when I knew. It wasn't dramatic. We didn't tumble into love. We built it, the way you build a fire, gently, patiently, layering warmth until it crackles to life. She never asked about Celia. I never brought her up. There was no shadow in our story, just two people who found light where they didn't expect it. I married Juniper in the backyard, under a tree I planted my first year in Fair Oath. We have two kids now, Theo and Marin. I still build furniture. She still writes. And Bishop, old and slower now, sleeps near the fireplace most nights. I used to think love had to burn to be real, but Juniper taught me that real love doesn't demand. It doesn't threaten. It just stays. And in the staying, it heals. It started with a knock. Three soft raps, barely audible over the rain tapping at the windows. I was in the kitchen, drying dishes, while Marin colored at the table and Theo practiced chords on the piano, fingers stumbling through a piece Juniper had taught him last week. The scent of rosemary chicken filled the house, and I remember thinking, for a moment, how far I'd come from the noise of the past. Then Juniper's voice cut through from the foyer. "Rowan, you'll want to see this." The way she said it, low, hesitant, almost apologetic, made my heart pause mid-beat. I wiped my hands on the towel and turned the corner, expecting maybe a neighbor in trouble or a package left in the rain. Instead, I saw the shape of a memory I thought I'd buried. Celia stood on the porch, like a ghost who didn't know she was supposed to stay dead. She was flanked by Greta and Claude, older now, grayer, still wearing their judgments like tailored coats, and behind them, umbrella held over all their heads, was Jackson. The last face I expected, and somehow still the one that made my jaw clench the hardest. No one spoke. The rain filled the silence with its steady percussion against the eaves. I didn't move. I just stood there, barefoot on the hardwood, arms crossed loosely over my chest, staring through the storm of old wounds come to life. They looked as out of place as a bad memory in a peaceful dream. Celia's eyes flicked past me, past the foyer, and widened as she took in the home behind me. My home. Her gaze caught the hallway lined with framed photos, Juniper reading to the kids on the porch, Theo's first day of school, Marin in a sunflower field, all those small moments stitched into a life. Then it moved to the living room, where Halecraft pieces stood like quiet trophies, tables, bookshelves, chairs. Every inch of the place was touched by my hands, by the life I rebuilt from splinters. Greta blinked, as if she couldn't reconcile what she was seeing with the man she thought I was. Claude shifted uncomfortably, his eyes landing on the grand piano beside the fireplace, the same one he once told me was too lofty for a man like me. They weren't just surprised to see me. They were stunned to see who I'd become. And I didn't say a single word. Theo appeared beside me, holding a model airplane, face scrunched in confusion. "Dad, who are they?" I rested a hand gently on his shoulder. "No one important, son." That landed like a brick. Celia flinched. Jackson looked away. Greta bristled. Claude coughed, that signature throat clear he used when discomfort needed covering. But Juniper, she stepped forward, not with hostility, but with that calm steadiness that had always grounded me. She stood beside me, close enough that our shoulders brushed, and didn't say a word. She didn't need to. Her presence was enough. It always was. "Rowan," Celia finally said, her voice barely carrying over the rain. "I didn't mean to just show up like this. Yet here you are," I said. She took a shaky breath. "I needed to see you." "Why?" I asked, my tone quiet but sharp. "After 12 years, what exactly did you think you'd find?" Her mouth opened, but she didn't answer. Greta stepped in, like a handler. "We didn't come to cause a scene. We just found your address," I cut in. "Which none of you should have." Claude took a step forward.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Clearly ready to deliver some monologue filled with guilt-wrapped intentions, but I wasn't in the mood for redemption theater. I raised a hand slightly, palm out. "Don't. Just don't." Behind me, I could feel my children watching. This wasn't just about me anymore. This wasn't a private heartbreak being re-examined. This was my life, my family, my home. They were standing in it, uninvited, unannounced, acting like they had some moral right to be here. "We didn't know you'd..." Celia motioned vaguely toward the house. "Done all this." "You mean lived?" She dropped her gaze. Jackson shifted his weight, clearly uncomfortable but not enough to leave. "You all said I couldn't survive without her," I said, my eyes moving between them. "You said I was selfish for not applauding her decision. You wanted me to honor her for abandoning our wedding, and now you show up like that didn't happen." Greta tried again. She was young. It was a complicated time. "No," I snapped. It wasn't complicated. It was a choice. She made it, and I made mine. Celia's lip quivered, but it was hard to tell if it was remorse or embarrassment. Maybe both. You don't belong here, I said, not shouting, not trembling, just telling the truth. You walked out of my life, all of you. I didn't chase you then. I'm sure as hell not inviting you in now. I turned my back, took Juniper's hand, and walked toward the kitchen. I didn't mean to slam the door or curse them out. I just left them standing there, soaked in their own regret. Celia stepped forward first. It was always her move, taking the lead, speaking softly enough to sound vulnerable but firmly enough to stay in control. Some part of me still remembered how I used to lean in when she spoke, like her words carried answers I needed. That part of me was long gone. Rowan, I never meant to hurt you, she began, her voice shaking, like she was the one who needed comforting. She didn't look the same. Time had drawn soft lines around her eyes and mouth, and her once fiery confidence had dulled into something cautious, regretful maybe, or just rehearsed. Greta stepped in, her arms crossed tightly across her chest. We raised Celia to follow her heart, she said, like it was a badge of honor instead of an excuse. Jackson needed her. I tilted my head, barely able to contain the disbelief crawling up my throat. So did I. Claude cleared his throat, always the mediator, always the one who tried to lace manipulation with politeness. We've fallen on hard times, he said. Jackson's business collapsed, Celia is divorced now, and we thought maybe we could talk. I almost laughed. Talk. As if that word hadn't died between us 12 years ago. As if conversation could rebuild the bridge they lit on fire and danced around. Talk about what? I asked, arms still folded, my voice steady, but I could feel the pulse in my jaw. I had nothing to prove, but something in me wanted them to hear every beat of what they'd missed. Celia looked up, smiling nervously. Us, she said, like it was obvious. Maybe we were always meant to circle back. You've done well. You built a life. Maybe we could... I didn't let her finish. You mean come back into the life you threw away? The words landed heavy. She blinked fast, like the weight of them stung. Good. I was 22, Rowan, she said, her voice cracking. I didn't know what I was doing. You knew enough to leave, I replied. Greta stepped in, indignant now. You make it sound like she did something unforgivable. She did, I said, and you helped her do it. I could feel Juniper standing just behind me. She hadn't spoken, hadn't moved from the archway where she stood with her hand resting lightly against the wall. That was her way. Presence without pressure. She trusted me to handle this, trusted me to protect the life we built. Claude sighed. You've made a wonderful home here, Rowan. We can all see that. It's just, Celia thought I'd still be here, I said, cutting him off, waiting, alone, maybe broken enough to be grateful if she ever wandered back. Celia swallowed hard. That's not fair. No, I said. What wasn't fair was you giving me an ultimatum 4 days before our wedding. What wasn't fair was expecting me to cancel everything while you ran off to hold another man's hand. What wasn't fair was telling me to stay alone if I didn't support it and meaning it. She looked like she might cry, but the tears didn't come. Maybe they weren't real enough, maybe they were, and she'd just forgotten how to use them on me. You were always so sure of things, she whispered, even when I wasn't. Wrong, I said. I wasn't sure of things. I was sure of you, and that was my mistake. For a moment, the room fell quiet. Even the rain outside seemed to pause, giving space for whatever silence needed to sit between us. Then Theo's voice floated in from the other room, calling for Juniper. It grounded me again, reminded me what mattered and what didn't. You don't get to come back now and try to reclaim something you destroyed, I said. This isn't a movie. There's no dramatic reunion here. You don't get to walk in, see the life I built, and decide you want a piece of it. We're not trying to take anything, Claude said, but even he sounded unsure. I met Celia's eyes one more time. I'm not angry anymore. That's what you don't understand. I don't hate you. I just don't need you. She stared at me, speechless, and I meant it, every word. The bitterness had burned off long ago. What remained was something stronger, something peaceful. She had taken my past, but she had no place in my present and certainly no claim to my future. Jackson hadn't spoken, not yet, but I saw him shifting behind them, jaw clenched, arms crossed, like he'd swallowed more pride than he could handle. I didn't care, not about his downfall, his struggles, his pain. That man stole my wedding day and still had the nerve to look bored in my hallway. I turned to Juniper then, offering her a faint smile. She nodded back, silent approval in her eyes. I faced them all one last time. This conversation is over. Juniper didn't say a word as she stepped beside me. She didn't need to. Her presence, solid, calm, was louder than anything Celia or her family had said since showing up. Her hand slid into mine, fingers threading through the calluses, grounding me. Our kids stood in the hallway, barely hidden behind the corner wall. Marin's curls poked out as she peeked around, wide-eyed. Theo held her hand protectively. He was too young to understand the history standing at our front door, but old enough to know this wasn't just a normal visit. "Who are they, Dad?" he asked, his voice cautious but steady. I looked down at him, then back at the people who once taught me how cruel indifference could be. "No one important," I said. That hit like a knife. Celia blinked hard, visibly stung. Greta straightened, like she'd been slapped. Claude's brows knitted together in confusion, trying to mask the awkwardness on his face. But Jackson, of course, couldn't keep his mouth shut. He stepped forward, arms crossed, scanning the house like he was still sizing up competition. "You really think you won, don't you?" he said, a bitter laugh coloring his words. "You think this," he gestured to the walls, the open layout, the gleaming furniture, "makes you better than us?" I tilted my head slightly, not moving, not rising to the bait. "No," I said, "but it does mean I survived without begging you to stay alive." His jaw twitched. That was the kind of line that doesn't land immediately. It sinks in slowly, eats at the ribs. He opened his mouth to respond, then shut it. "Smart move." Greta's eyes swept over the hallway, pausing on the family portraits, one of me holding newborn Marin, one of Juniper reading to Theo by the fireplace, photos of vacations, first school days, birthdays, lazy afternoons, the snapshots of a life they never expected me to have, the kind of life they told me I wouldn't achieve without Celia. "Your children are beautiful," she said eventually, like offering a compliment could smooth over the crater they'd left. I nodded once, slow. "They are. They look like a happy family," Claude added, trying to be diplomatic, as though civility could rewrite history. "They are one," Juniper said suddenly, her voice low but sure. "They have one." Celia's eyes moved slowly over the living room. My work was everywhere, handcrafted tables, custom shelving, the rocking chair I built for Marin the week she was born, the signature Hailcraft stamp etched into each piece. She reached out, like she might touch one of the side tables, but thought better of it. Her hand hovered, then fell. "You really moved on," she whispered, as if she still didn't believe it, even while standing in the evidence. "I had to," I said. "You moved out of my life. I just didn't follow you." That silence again, the heavy one, the kind that fills a room when there's nothing left to say but the truth. For a moment, no one spoke, just the ticking of the old clock above the mantel, just the kids' soft footsteps behind us as they retreated to their rooms. Then, of all people, Jackson spoke again. "You act like you're better than us, like you've never made mistakes." I didn't move, didn't blink, just locked eyes with him. Of course I made mistakes. I trusted the wrong people. That was my biggest one. He took a step back, jaw tight, clearly realizing he wouldn't win this version of the game. Not here, not in my house. Celia looked down, her voice faint. "I never thought you'd really be happy without me. That might have hurt once. It didn't now." "You weren't the happiness," I said. "You were the lesson." Her face crumpled, like she wasn't sure whether to cry or scream, but I wasn't offering either option. She opened her mouth to speak, maybe to defend herself, maybe to plead, but I raised a hand gently. "No. You canceled our wedding for a man who isn't even in your life anymore." "He lied," she whispered, eyes flicking toward Jackson, then away. "About being sick. He manipulated me." I nodded once. "And you chose him anyway." Juniper stepped closer. She didn't interrupt. She didn't need to. Her presence said everything. She was the quiet that came after the storm, the peace I didn't know I was allowed to have. Celia looked at her, really looked for a second. I thought she might say thank you, but she didn't. She looked down again. "I don't hate you, Celia," I said quietly. "I just don't see you the same. And that's the difference between now and then. You thought you could walk back in and press resume, but this life," I gestured around, "it's already playing, and you're not in it." She nodded slowly, like she finally understood, and maybe, for the first time, she actually did. Theo came bounding into the room, his sneakers thudding softly against the wood floor as he held something tightly in both hands. "Dad, look what I drew!" His voice was bright, unaffected by the heavy air still lingering between the walls. He didn't know what was happening, at least not entirely, but kids have an uncanny sense for tension. They know when a storm's passed, even if they don't feel the thunder. I knelt to meet him as he held out the sheet of paper, the edges wrinkled, and the crayon lines bold and proud. "It's our house," he said, pointing. "And that's you building it, and that's me and Marin and Mom reading to us on the porch." At the bottom, in his messy 7-year-old handwriting, were the words "built by Dad, loved by all." I smiled, and it wasn't forced. "You did great, kiddo." Theo beamed, then glanced over my shoulder at the unfamiliar faces still standing awkwardly near the door. "Can I go show Marin?" "Go ahead," I said, ruffling his hair. He ran off, the sound of his footsteps fading into the back hall. I stood and turned to find Celia watching me, like she'd just seen a version of me she didn't think existed. Maybe she hadn't, not really. Back then I was building a life around her, not for myself. And when she left, I realized I didn't even know what I wanted beyond her. But I learned. Pain teaches better than love ever could. Celia's eyes brimmed with tears. He's beautiful. He's mine, I said simply. She blinked, letting one tear escape down her cheek. I never thought you'd really be happy without me. I didn't soften. You weren't the happiness, Celia. You were the lesson. Her lip trembled. She took a small step forward but stopped herself. Do you know what it's like to wake up and realize you bet your entire future on a lie? Jackson told me he had cancer, stage 4. He cried on my lap, begged me not to let him die alone, said you'd be fine, that you were strong. I believed him. You also loved him, I replied. That's what you don't want to admit. You didn't just go out of pity. You went because you wanted to. You wanted him more than you wanted us. She didn't argue, and I knew why. Because even if Jackson had lied, the truth was that she ran. The reason didn't matter. She chose him over me, over what we'd built, over the promises, over the future. I shook my head, the weight of the moment pressing down harder than expected. You know what stings the most? It's not that you left. It's that you made it feel like I should be grateful you even told me. She opened her mouth to respond, but I kept going. I was supposed to marry you, and instead, I was humiliated, alone, blocked from the life I'd built around you, told I needed to obey and understand, as if loyalty was some luxury I didn't earn. I was young, she whispered. I was scared. So was I said. Difference is, I didn't run. Juniper walked in then, holding Marin on her hip, and the tension in the room shifted again. Marin rested her head against Juniper's shoulder, half asleep, thumb near her mouth. Juniper looked over at me, then at Celia, not with hatred or envy, but quiet strength. Is it okay if I take them upstairs? She asked. Yeah, I nodded, grateful for her sense of timing. Thank you. She turned and carried Marin up the stairs, her silhouette framed by the glow of the hallway light. And I swear, at that moment, nothing Celia could say would ever come close to what Juniper had just done, not because of the gesture, but because she belonged here. She was part of the life I built, not some outsider knocking at the gates. You really did it, Celia said finally. You really started over. No, I replied. I didn't start over. I just started. She nodded slowly. And I don't belong in it anymore, do I? I looked at her, at the woman who once held all of my future in her hands and threw it away like confetti. You never did. Her face twisted with something between sorrow and shame. She turned toward the door, where Greta and Claude waited, still silent, unsure, out of place in the warmth of this home. But before she left, she said one more thing. I'm sorry. I didn't reply, not because I didn't believe her, but because the words came a decade too late. Juniper was upstairs, tucking in our children. My son had drawn a picture of the life I built. My daughter fell asleep to the sound of her mother's voice reading her a story. There was nothing Celia could offer that would match that, and I had no space left for ghosts. I should have known they didn't come just to say sorry. People like that, people who walk away when it matters and come back when it's convenient, they never arrive empty-handed or empty-hearted. They bring needs, expectations, debt wrapped in nostalgia. Claude was the first to drop the mask. He cleared his throat, looked around the room one more time and said, "We came to ask for help." There it was. Celia didn't flinch. Greta turned her head, as if she were embarrassed but not surprised. Jackson's arms stayed crossed, his mouth twitching like he'd rather be anywhere else than here. But he didn't leave. That said enough. I leaned against the staircase banister, arms folded. Help with what? Claude's gaze lowered slightly, his tone taking on the flavor of a man trying to soften a confession. Things haven't been easy. Jackson's business collapsed during the pandemic. We invested heavily. The loss was significant. Significant. That word does so much heavy lifting when pride's at stake. He continued, Celia lost her condo after the divorce. Greta's, well, her position at the foundation was compromised after a grant misappropriation issue. We've been struggling. Struggling. The same family that once looked down their nose at me, called my career quaint, and told me I wasn't stable enough for Celia, was now standing in my home, where every plank and nail had been placed by my own two hands, telling me they needed help. I raised an eyebrow. You came to ask for my money? Greta's head snapped up. It's not like that. Then what's it like? Celia stepped forward again. It's not just about money, Rowan. It's also, maybe a second chance. A connection. We've all made mistakes. Juniper appeared in the doorway then, arms crossed, her expression unreadable, but her eyes, those sharp, intuitive eyes, were locked on Celia. She didn't interrupt. She didn't need to. Her silence was a shield around our home. Connection, I repeated, my voice low. After 12 years of silence, you suddenly want a connection? Celia looked at Juniper, and for the first time since she walked through the door, her confidence cracked. Juniper had that effect on people. She didn't command rooms. She commanded truth, just by standing still. You came here, I continued, not because you missed me, not because you regretted what you did. You came here because everything you thought you'd have fell apart, and I didn't. Claude took a step closer. You're successful, Rowan. It's obvious. And despite everything, we're still family, in a way. I laughed, just once, sharp. Family? You cut me off the moment I stopped serving your story. You all told yourselves a lie about Celia's noble decision, and shoved me into the role of selfish villain. And now that I've made something of myself, you want to rewrite history and call it kinship. Greta shook her head quickly. We're not asking for much, just... Juniper stepped forward, her voice quiet, controlled, but it carried through the room like thunder. You want help? She said, scanning each of them. Apologize first. Silence. Not one of them spoke, not even Jackson, who now looked like he was ready to slip out the door and pretend this never happened. No apologies, no acknowledgement. Just a wall of silence thicker than the one they gave me 12 years ago. Juniper turned to me. You don't owe them anything, Rowan. Not your peace, not your forgiveness, certainly not your money. I looked at Celia, waiting, still nothing. You can't even say you're sorry, I said, the words flat now. You showed up here hoping I'd still be the version of me you left, quiet, uncertain, desperate to be chosen. But that man is long gone. Claude opened his mouth again, but I stopped him with a raised hand. I don't need the details of your misfortunes, I said. I've lived mine. I buried the man you left behind. I grieved him, and then I built this. I motioned to the house, to Juniper, to the life still breathing behind every door in this home. You didn't come here to reconnect, I added. You came to collect, and I'm not your inheritance. Greta's voice broke the silence, brittle and uneven. We thought maybe you'd be the kind of man who forgives. I am, I said. But forgiveness isn't the same as access. I forgave you all years ago. That's why I'm not bitter. That's why I could move on. But that doesn't mean you get to walk through my door and ask for pieces of what I've built without ever acknowledging what you broke. They stared at me, stunned into silence, standing in the warmth of a home they had no part in creating. And I stood there, solid in the truth I had earned. This time, they would leave empty-handed. The door had never felt heavier in my hand. Maybe it was the weight of 12 years pressing down, or maybe it was just the realization that I was the one holding the exit open for the people who once told me I didn't belong in their version of the future. Either way, I stood there at the threshold, fingers resting against the wood, as Celia and her entourage hovered just shy of the porch steps. They weren't moving, not quickly, not eagerly, like they were waiting for something else, some miracle, some mercy, some last-minute reversal where I'd sigh and say, fine, come in, let's pretend none of this happened. But I wasn't built for pretending anymore. You thought I'd still be waiting for you, I said, my voice quiet, almost conversational, like my life would freeze until you decided to thaw it. Celia winced, but she didn't interrupt. Greta, standing beside her, twisted the strap of her handbag, clearly unused to discomfort that wasn't dressed up in charity galas and subtle manipulation. Claude kept a hand on her shoulder, his own gaze drifting past me into the home they thought I didn't deserve. But I didn't wait. I continued. I built. I healed. I moved on. That was the truth in its purest form. I didn't just move away from them. I didn't just cut contact. I remade myself. Not to spite them, not to show them, but because I had to, because I couldn't carry their absence forever. At some point, you stop waiting at a door that never opens. You build your own house. So that's it? Celia finally asked, her voice faint. After everything, that's it? I studied her for a moment. The girl I had loved, bright-eyed, reckless, full of fire, was gone. What stood before me was a woman shaped by her choices, and while I didn't hate her, I no longer felt bound to the story we almost wrote. That was it 12 years ago, I said. Her shoulders dropped, the finality of my words folding over her like a weighted blanket. Jackson stood a few feet behind them, hands in his pockets, jaw locked in that same smug tension he wore like armor. But even he looked defeated now. He hadn't said a word since Juniper spoke. Maybe it finally hit him that he wasn't just the man Celia left me for. He was the reason she was standing here, empty-handed and unsure. As they turned to leave, Greta paused, her gaze lingering on a family photo by the front entryway. I didn't know if it was curiosity or jealousy or something more twisted. Maybe she was trying to understand how I could possibly have made a life better than the one they offered. Jackson muttered something as he stepped past the threshold. I almost didn't hear it, but the bitterness in his tone carried through the air like smoke. This house is just luck, he said under his breath. I laughed, Not loud, not bitter, just a single exhale, amused at the absurdity. No, Jackson, I replied, staring him down. Luck is surviving you. I let that hang there, weighty and clean. Then I added, this house, this life, it's everything you said I'd never achieve. And the best part? I did it without stepping on anyone to get here. He didn't respond. He didn't have to. His silence was a surrender he wasn't brave enough to admit out loud. Greta and Claude followed close behind, their retreat awkward and sluggish, like they weren't used to being dismissed. They expected negotiation, a conversation, maybe even pity. But what they got was the reality they earned, irrelevance. Celia was the last to step off the porch. She looked back once, like she was waiting for a crack in my face, a softening, a second thought. But there was none. I had already said goodbye the first time she left. This was just the punctuation. I shut the door, and it didn't feel like a slam. It felt like closure. I stood there for a moment, hands still on the knob, heart steady. The hallway behind me was warm, filled with the faint sound of my daughter laughing in the distance, Juniper's soft footsteps coming down the stairs, the scent of cinnamon and pine still hanging in the air from the candle she lit earlier. It was over. The ghosts had come, they saw, and they left. Not because they wanted to, but because they had no place here anymore. I turned away from the door, walked toward my family, and didn't look back. Later that night, after the dishes were done and the kids were asleep, Juniper and I sat on the front porch in the quiet we'd earned. The rain had passed, leaving the air crisp and fragrant, like the sky itself had been scrubbed clean. The wood beneath our feet was cool, still slightly damp, and Bishop lay curled beside my chair, his old frame rising and falling with the slow rhythm of deep sleep. Juniper handed me a mug of tea and sat beside me without a word. That was her way. She never pressed. She waited until I wanted to speak, and when I did, she listened like my voice was the only one in the world. You okay? She asked softly, not looking at me but out toward the lawn, where fireflies blinked lazily in the dark. I took a sip, let the warmth of the mug settle between my palms. Better than okay. It surprised me how much I meant it. There were no tremors in my hands, no lingering anger in my chest, no ache in the back of my throat from words left unsaid. For years, I thought closure would come with confrontation. Some grand moment of reckoning where I'd finally get the apology I deserved. But it hadn't, and yet I felt lighter than I ever had. They really thought they could walk back in, I said, shaking my head. She glanced at me now, her expression unreadable but calm. Ghosts always do. They don't knock because they think they still have a key. I smiled faintly at that. Not anymore. From inside the house, faint laughter trickled out. Theo was whispering to Marin, probably making her giggle when she was supposed to be sleeping. Their joy was unrushed, honest, untouched by the bitterness that once defined my world. And it struck me, not for the first time, how lucky I was. Not because of fate, but because I didn't stop walking when the road turned cold. Do you ever regret it? I asked, surprising myself with the question. Coming here? This life? Us? She turned fully now, her face soft in the amber glow spilling from the porch light. No, she said. Because this life, it's the one we made on purpose, not the one we settled for. I looked at her then, really looked at the woman who had stitched herself so gently into my broken places, who had never asked to be a savior, but became the reason I no longer needed one. She had walked into my shop for a desk and built a home instead. You saved me, I said, not needing her to say it back, but she did anyway. And you let yourself be saved. That's the part no one ever talks about. We sat in silence for a while after that, watching our children's shadows dance behind their bedroom curtains, the house glowing like a heartbeat behind us. The place was more than wood and nails. It was memories carved into every corner. It was safety. It was ours. Sometimes ghosts return. Sometimes they dress up as remorse or nostalgia or desperation, but they only haunt if you invite them in, and I didn't. I never would. The truth is, I didn't just move on from Celia. I moved into the life I was meant for, a life where love didn't ask for sacrifices that only went one way, a life that wasn't defined by what I'd lost, but by what I dared to build. Juniper.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Her reached over and rested her hand on mine. They'll try again, you know. Maybe not soon, maybe not ever, but people like that, they always come back when they think you're alone. I won't be, I said. Not anymore. We stayed out there until the air turned colder and the moon climbed higher. When we finally stood to head inside, Bishop groaned and stretched, then followed us up the steps, like the guardian he'd always been. Inside, the house smelled like warm blankets and childhood toys scattered in the living room, art projects still taped crookedly on the fridge, and the low hum of the baby monitor catching Marin's even breathing. I paused at the threshold, taking it all in. This was mine, not because I owned it, not because I paid for it or signed the deed, but because I built it with intention, day by day, nail by nail, choice by choice. And I built it with someone who never once made me question my worth. The photo frames on the wall didn't hold reminders of pain. They held victories, of mornings started together, of birthdays celebrated with messy cakes and loud songs, of moments that didn't need to be perfect to be permanent. I looked over at Juniper, already flipping through a book on the couch, her legs curled beneath her, hair falling over one shoulder. She didn't look up, but she smiled when she felt my gaze. "I'm home," I said. "You always were," she replied. And she was right. I didn't need revenge. I didn't need to be proven right. I didn't need anything from the people who walked out of my life, because what I had now, what I chose, what I nurtured, what I protected, that was enough. More than enough.
Hey, I'm Dr. Z, and I'm a neurosurgeon. So that means long hours, early rounds, late nights, and everything in between. And through it all, I wear Figs. Because they're built for what I do. Through the chaos, through the hours, and through whatever the day throws at me, they do their job so I can do mine. They're comfortable when it counts and functional when I need them the most. So where do you wear your Figs? On shift, on call, on the couch in the break room, listening to this podcast, wherever it is, they fit right in. And now listeners of this podcast can get 15% off their first order. Just head to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX at checkout. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.